So this morning our lesson is entitled By Any Means Possible, which is the passage that was read to us a little bit earlier by Brother Ken in Philippians chapter 3. As a matter of fact, it is the very phrase that the Apostle Paul uses. It's interesting as he defends himself to the Philippians, and I don't know that he's having to do this. It's not like the relationship that he had with Corinth where he felt compelled to defend himself to them. The Corinthians did not feel very impressed by him. They really liked Apollos. Apollos was wise enough, though, not to really fan that particular flame. And he didn't go to Corinth the way the Corinthians had wanted. So Paul was kind of what was left, at least that's what they thought. But when Paul says this to the Philippians, he's in a larger context, talking about himself and his credibility to them. His pedigree is one of the ideas that might come up. And so in verses 8, 9 through 11, he says, I count everything as loss. Now, everything in this context is what he's been talking about from verse 1 basically through about verse 6 and 7, which is, I'm a Hebrew of the Hebrews, Benjamite. You know, when it came to the law, he said, I was blameless. And yet, with all that, he said, that's just garbage compared to what I want with Christ. In the ESV, it says rubbish, which I know is a very English word. You know, you put it in the rubbish, put it in the bin. It's the idea, though, that all of our past successes, and I know sometimes this passage, especially when we get into like verse 12, where he says, I'm reaching forward, I forget all that lies behind. We kind of think of all the past mistakes we've made. But here, Paul is not saying, look at all the past mistakes I've made. He's saying, look at all my successes. And I'm taking that in consideration and saying that those things that I look back on and that you may look back on and say, man, I remember the days. He says, that's all garbage. That's all just rubbish in order that I may gain Christ and be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ. Righteousness from God that depends on faith. And as he closes there in verses 10 and 11, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and may share in his sufferings and becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible I may attain the resurrection from the dead. I don't know if you think about the resurrection from the dead as something that you're like, by any means possible. Or is it just an optional sort of thing that is set before us? I'll be honest with you, I think we just take the idea for granted that God is going to raise us in the last day because we've spent a little bit of time in church, you know, that kind of thing. It's like we've done this a little bit, we'll get this huge benefit, this huge eternal reward. We know we don't deserve it as we really, really do start to think about this, but Paul's point isn't, I'm working my way in, I'm going to work really hard. His point is, I'm going to depend on Christ more now than ever. If by any means possible I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. It wasn't because Paul was a great guy. As a matter of fact, Paul in his pedigree, earlier in the first few verses of this chapter, mentions that when it came to zeal, his proof of zeal for God was persecution of the church. Which you would think he wouldn't think that, but he did. He said, look, if I had to prove my zealousness for God, I persecuted the church. I don't think he's speaking of it in a positive way at all. It's like, it's just something that if he had to prove it, he could. I don't know how we could prove it. How could we prove our zeal? How could we ever say, I know I couldn't even come close to saying, when it came to the law, I'm blameless. Paul said that, though. He didn't say he was perfect. He couldn't be blamed, which maybe you're saying tomato, tomato, same sort of thing. And maybe it is. But still, it's just amazing to me that the Apostle Paul isn't speaking in a way that, I'm an apostle, of course I've got eternal life. He says, I may know him. I want to know him and the power of his resurrection, that I may share in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible. I know we don't think of this sort of thing, but this is, I think, part of it. It's how far we're willing to go. I have the idea of hacking Agag to pieces. Brother in Christ preached a lesson on this many years ago that has just stuck with me. It's really good because the point is, with our sin, we kind of embrace it. We kind of build an outhouse. It is an outhouse. It's not part of the house, but we still can go visit. We still can go to that part of who we are. And his point is, we got to burn it all down. We got to get rid of it, destroy it, kill it. And so like Saul and Samuel and Agag, you might remember that King Saul was told to utterly destroy the Amalekites, and he doesn't do it. He blames the people. And I'm not saying the people had nothing to do with that decision or encouraging Saul, but it was Saul's call. It really was, because God had given him the command to do this, and he didn't do it. And so Samuel calls Agag, and in front of Saul, kills Agag, hacking him into pieces. And there's no way to look at that and go, well, I wonder what that seems like. I mean, I don't know. I've got a very active imagination on things like this. When I was growing up, Hitchcock was really, you know, famous. I really liked Alfred Hitchcock's stories because he didn't show you everything. He would let your imagination run with it. You would see the drain in the tub with what seemed to be blood, because remember, his movies were all in black and white. So you had an imaginary sort of thing going on, which really added to it. My imagination with this is there was blood and bits everywhere on Saul and on Samuel. And of course, Agag is hacked into pieces. It's not that Samuel just wanted to, and I think this is what happens. It's the fact that Agag, as you read there, says basically, and I love this, he says cheerfully, surely the bitterness of death is past, you know, it's like it's a big joke, you know. And Samuel says, as your sword has made women childless, so shall your mother be childless among women. And Samuel hacked Agag to pieces. This is not anything but violent. This is extremely violent because he wanted to make sure Saul got the point, not Agag. Agag might have died on the first thrust. I don't know. This was more a point to Saul. And this was more a point to everybody else who would see this, that this is how God looked at this. When I think of by any means possible, I genuinely do think about Agag. If we're going to kill the flesh, then we need to kill it. Not leave any doubt. It's not the sort of thing, well, I think he's still breathing, you know. There's literally no doubt. And so that's the challenge, I think, that's set before us, is to take sin so seriously that we want to get so far away from it. As has already been mentioned in prayers and all, we've got Romans 10:17, that faith comes from hearing and hearing through the word of Christ. As the writer of Hebrews reminds us, without faith, it's impossible. He doesn't say faith is a part of this. He says without it, it's impossible to please him. That whoever draws near to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him, or that he rewards those who seek him. God is not a God who's just out to get us. He's a rewarder. He wants to reward, and he will reward. As I've already referenced in the first few verses of Philippians chapter 3, where Paul is saying, you know, when it comes to who I am with circumcision, or we who are the circumcision, that is in the Spirit of God and glory of Christ, we don't put any confidence in the flesh. Even though I can, and that's his point, I could do that. If anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence, I have more. Circumcised the eighth day, people of Israel, tribe of Benjamin, Hebrew of Hebrews. When it came to the law, a Pharisee. When it came to zeal, persecutor of the church. To righteousness under the law, blameless. But whatever gain I had, all of this is gain, he says, I counted it as loss for the sake of Christ. And then, of course, verses 8 through 11. And then in verse 12 through 14, not that I've already obtained it. I'm not done. I'm still in the middle of the process, if you will. I am not already perfect. I am pressing on to make it my own because Christ has made me his own. And that's the point for each one of us as Christians. We've been made into what we've been made by God. Are we done? Is the process of growth done? No. And that's what Paul is saying. Not that I've already obtained this or already perfect. Brothers, I don't consider that I've made it my own, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, and in context, he's talking about all his successes, straining forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ. It's not, well, I've gotten this far, I'm now on cruise control. And I think sometimes it's easy for us to get on a spiritual cruise control. And what I mean by that is we're going through the motions. Our partaking of the Lord's Supper may be nothing more than just a going through the motions. We hear somebody say something, and we take this little cracker, we drink that little juice, and okay, you know, we're good. We're good for the next week. And as long as we're here to do that, and we go through that motion again, it's not ever getting into the heart. It's like it goes no further than the action itself. Sermons are time to take a nap. You know, maybe so. I mean, that's on you. It's not on me so much. All I'm trying to say is, it may be that that's where our satisfaction is in God, is we've just gone through the motion. We sang some songs. Can't tell you one thing we sang. Don't know that we were paying any attention to the words. Just made it sound pretty. Again, I think that's all that can become, because we're just, it's familiar. I think that's part of the problem, is that which is familiar. Let me say this, and there I remember reading a story about a guy who got he was in a radio call sort of thing, and a guy called in and wanted to leave his wife because the way he put it is, he couldn't remember anything that she had done that, you know, really just wowed him. He says, I thought about all the meals she's cooked, and there's just not one meal that stands out. And he went through this whole thing. I can't remember all the things he talked about, but it was all this, you know, stuff that he just said, I've had enough because she just doesn't wow me. Well, the guy turns it on him and says, how many times have you wowed her? I mean, come on. You know, every time you're just doing the things you've always been doing. I mean, what is this? So he said, for years she's been feeding you. Just because there's one meal that doesn't stand out, what does that mean? She's been feeding you this whole time, and she's been doing your laundry this whole time, just because there's not this one time that just wows you because of whatever. And I think sometimes that's what happens. Familiarity, we say, breeds contempt. It's just a familiar saying. We are contempting the saying, you know? We know that. Familiarity shouldn't breed contempt. I think this is the point of relationship with God, is the more we get to know Him, the more we want to know Him. It's not... Well, you get to a certain point, and it's the yawn of familiarity. It can be that way, but that's not on Him. That's on us. We think, and that's, I think, part of the deception, is Satan makes us think to ourselves, we know all this. There is nothing Jamie's going to say today that's just going to just set us on the edge of our seat. There is nothing that's going to wow us. We're not going to leave and think, wow, you know, it's just familiarity. And that's on each one of us. That's not just on y'all as an audience. That would be on me as a speaker. But also the fact is, the material that we're using, are we really at a point where we're just, oh, we know how all this goes. We know we need to be baptized. He's going to say something about that. If you've not been baptized, then obviously that hasn't changed anything, and you're going to go to hell. Not because I'm saying so, but because that's what the Bible teaches. I know we don't want to say things like that because people get, what is it? It's political correctness. When I was in high school, that's pretty much what it was, PC. And I remember we talked about it in our classes. We don't want to hurt people's feelings. Well, nobody wants to hurt feelings, but if hurting someone's feelings saves their soul, I'll hurt feelings. And I'm not saying let's just hurt feelings for the sake of it and hope a soul saved. But we're so timid. Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy, we're not to be, or 2 Timothy, we're not to be timid. God hasn't given us a spirit of timidity, but a power and love. So we need to be powerful in our love. That really is kind of the point. In 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27, Paul speaks about running in a race. And I know for most of us, we don't do the running thing. I don't know how many of y'all may be runners or joggers or whatever. But when you're in a race, it's a totally different thing. I now I couldn't do it. I used to run track. I was really fast for my age and in my age group. But I never developed it any more than going through high school. And that was that. But I can tell you, any race I entered, I expected to win. It wasn't, I'm coming into the race because I want to come in fourth, you know. I was so disappointed if I lost. If I came in second, even if it was by .001, which I think one of the 200 meters, I was the 200 meter guy in high school, and I loved it. And if I lost, I lost. It was, you know, you get to stand up on the thing, the first, second, and third place guys. I liked being on the podium, but I liked being on the highest position of the podium. I want to be number one. Nobody enters just to enter, not to win. You want to win. And as Christians, I think that's part of it. Satan's deceived us into thinking, heaven's for a lot of people. You're going to get in. You don't have to try that hard. You don't have to do that much. I mean, come on, really. Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? He says, run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in everything. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. I don't run aimlessly. I don't box as one beating air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control. The word discipline there is a very interesting Greek word, which means to beat blue under the eye. How do you do that? Well, you know how you do that. You hit somebody so hard under their eye, you give them a black eye. That's exactly what this word means. It doesn't mean discipline in the sense of I just will eat salad and not, you know, something else. It means to beat black and blue. It means to beat up, to bring into submission. And you can think of all kinds of different people who fight, and that's what they do. They bring their enemy down. I discipline my body. My body's my enemy. I'm going to keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, Paul says, I myself should be disqualified. The writer of Hebrews tells us, focus on Jesus. Therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, the idea really is of entering into a stadium and you have all these people cheering you on because they want you to win. Let us also, just like they did, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race set before us. This isn't a sprint. This is a marathon. So run with endurance the race set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. He is seated at the right hand of God. Consider him. Think about him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself. We've kind of mentioned that in our partaking of the Lord's Supper, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Think about him. He didn't just come here and teach nice things. He suffered tremendously. And if he suffered, we will suffer. And we don't want to give up. And we don't want to just quit because this has gone on too long or something like that, or life isn't fair, you know? I think that's part of the problem with a lot of people now, is just everything's supposed to be so beautifully fair. We don't have, except in professional sports and people who are wanting into that, you know, we do participation trophies, and we're proud of that. You know, we don't keep score. I mean, I was listening to a gentleman on one of his podcasts, this politician from Virginia I like, and he was really funny. He's like, his youngest son is in soccer, and so he went to one of the games, and he said, so what's the score? And the people all sitting around him kind of hissed at him. He goes, well, I'm sorry, I didn't know I had to be quiet. They're like, no, you don't have to be quiet, but we don't keep score. You don't mention something like that. We don't. They're all winners. And he said he just sat there for a couple minutes and said, nope, not doing this. And he took his kid out, which is his prerogative. I remember when I was coaching softball, for the first couple few years when the girls were really young, everything was pretty much participation trophy. The one first year where they got old enough where the competition was allowed, it was hilarious because I remember asking them, because every team had you didn't have to be competitive. You could be if you wanted. So I asked all the girls, the whole team. I said, this is going to be a majority thing. So if the majority of you want one thing or the other, that's the way we're going to go. But do you all want to compete or do you just want to play? Because there's a difference. And if you play, everybody in every game will play. That was one of the rules we had. If it's competitive, some of you may never play because you're not that good. And yes, I said that, and I said it that way. And they sat there, and they kind of talked to each other, and unanimous. I mean, it wasn't one or two. It was unanimous. They want to play to compete. And there were a few times I had to remind some of the kids, because they weren't playing. They were like, why don't I play? Well, two things. One, you don't come to practice. That was one of my rules. You don't practice, you don't play. And the other thing is, you stink, which is really weird, because you need to be here for practice to get better. All the parents get mad at me. You can't believe me telling my kid she stinks. She does. I mean, watch. I hit a ball to her and the ball goes right between her legs, right into the outfield. I'm like, see? I mean, come on. This isn't hard. This isn't something, I mean, she needs to be here practice. Let's do that. that spirit is the spirit that our time doesn't really like except when we watch football. We want our team to win. I mean, my team got obliterated yesterday by Kentucky, of all things, which it's happened 3 years in a row, of all things. I'm a Florida Gator, for those of you who are like, don't know, and now you don't care, but I didn't watch the game and not feel something. I didn't sit there. I was watching other football games, and I'm like, this is fine because I don't care who wins. When you watch a game and you don't care who wins, whatever great play, you're like, yeah, whatever. Oh, he caught the ball. That's great. When it's something you're kind of invested in, you yell. You know, you get excited. And you feel like a champion when your team wins, right? You had nothing to do with it. But you feel like such a loser when your team loses, right? And you had nothing to do with it. God wants us to win, but he's not just saying, look, I'm handing this over to you. Like Paul was saying, it's not that I've already obtained this. It's not like I've gotten it because, well, I'm the Apostle Paul. I press on. I press on to make it my own because Christ has made me his own. I don't consider that I've made it my own. One thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, straining forward to what lies ahead, I press on. Pressing on implies a violence to this. The action, the force. I discipline my body. I beat it black and blue to keep it under control, like he said in 1 Corinthians 9. And again, the idea that we're trying to get here is by any means possible. What does that mean? That means I'm going to read my Bible for my benefit, not just read it because I know, the preacher says, I need to read the Bible. Somebody's told me I need to read the Bible, so I do that as an activity. Read it because you're looking for benefit from it. You're looking for strength. Why, you know, the older we get especially, we start changing diets. You know, we eat more of the things we don't really want to eat. We eat less of the things we really do want to eat. However you want to look at the priority, right? We change things. Why? I mean, why? Because there's a benefit. I mean, if you go to the doctor and he says, look, you eat what you want. You're like, oh yeah. I had a doctor tell me that. Eat what you want if you want to die young. Just do it. I mean, nobody's going to stop you. But if you want to have a better life, longer life, you need to eat these things and not eat these things. I'm like, no, man. So when I make those choices, it's a benefit. We need to see the Bible as a benefit, not just, I mean, I know most of us have Bibles like mine where it's just words, right? That's it. No pictures. There's no graphics in there. You might have one with that. That's kind of more rare, but I think that's part of the problem. We just don't see it as anything more than just a manual, maybe, you know? It's God who has communicated himself to us by his interaction with people. So, by any means possible. What obstacles might we be dealing with? Sorry, I was looking down. The way I have it printed is different than that. That's why I was thinking I needed to touch the number thing again. What's standing in our... What obstacle? In Romans 16, 17, 18, like I have there before you, Paul says, I appeal to you to watch out for those who cause divisions, who create obstacles, which is an interesting word, which means scandal. That's scandalon. That's where we get our word scandal from, actually. Anything that is contrary to the doctrine that you might have been taught, avoid them. I've heard people say, well, this person, I know he doesn't teach the truth, but I like listening to him. Okay. What? Such persons don't serve our Lord Christ, but their own appetites, and by smooth talk and flattery they deceive the hearts of the naive. I don't know what obstacles. Not everybody deals with the same exact obstacles. It was interesting that Andy was reading from 1 Corinthians 10 this morning, as I have here the slide, verse 31 through 33, because Paul says to the Corinthians, because some of the Corinthians were like, look, we can eat what we want. Paul's like, you can, but you might offend somebody. And it's not just... The scaredy 21st century might offend. It's the full point of saving a soul. That's the whole point. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews or to the Greeks. In other words, the offense would be like you have a Jewish friend. You're wanting to convert. You don't say, here are all these foods that I eat that you know he can't eat. I mean, to this day, I haven't had the opportunity, but if I ate with a Muslim, I know... If I knew anything about their dietary restrictions, I wouldn't say, let's go to a place where I know my food's going to offend you. You know, I wouldn't do that because I'm trying to win the soul. So whatever it is you do, do it all to the glory of God. As he says, I try to please everyone and everything. I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, that I may be saved. Or that they may be saved, sorry. And that's the point. We're looking for others' salvation. So we do what we can. Doesn't mean we're able to please everybody. He doesn't say, I do please everybody. I try to. That's exactly what he says. Earlier in chapter 8, verse 13, Paul wrote, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat. What do we say sometimes? You know, somebody might be offended by whatever, like, well, they'll just have to deal with it. That's not Paul's attitude. Paul says, if my brother's going to stumble because of this, then I won't do it, lest my brother stumble. Paul says the same kind of thing in Romans 14, 13. Let us not pass judgment on one another any longer, but rather decide never to put a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of a brother. In Colossians 3, verses 1 through 3, and then verse 5 and 8, Paul writes, if you've been raised with Christ, speaking in baptism, you've been raised, then seek the things, keep seeking the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things on earth, for you've died. And your life is hidden with Christ in God. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. That's the whole hacking Agag to pieces thing. Put to death. He doesn't say, you know, keep that part of you alive as long as you can. He says, put to death what is earthly in you. Sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. But now you must put them all away. Anger and wrath and malice and slander and obscene talk from your mouth. If you can't control your mouth, James tells us, you know, I mean, James 3, it's like out of the same mouth come blessing and cursing. These things should not be. I mean, I know there's some things in the Bible we see in lists like this that we're like, well, I don't have a problem with that. Maybe you don't, but then there are these other things maybe you do. Hacking Agag to pieces, killing it all, act like he says again. That is the point, that we put to death what is earthly in us. And it's a decision, again, and this is the point that I would make as we're coming close to the end here, by any means possible. Whatever that cost is. That's what Jesus said. Whatever the cost. Count the cost. As we close, excuse me, Luke 9:23-25, Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up the cross daily and follow me. For whoever would see or save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world, loses or forfeits his own soul? What is it? I know we live in a time where we know a lot of things about a lot of different people. It's interesting reading some sort of biographical information about really rich people. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, you know, those are two guys I think of. There are many others you could think of. But when you read their biographies, it's interesting because the bottom line is they have interests like any other person has interests. I was reading about Elon Musk and he likes macaroni and cheese. And I'm like, okay, I must be a billionaire in heart, right? Because I like macaroni and cheese. No. It just shows you they're people. I got a lot of money. That's obviously what sets them apart. But we live in a time where we want all that. What if you could do that and be that, but you lose your soul? I mean, even trying hard, we might live to be 80 or 90 years old or 100 years old. That's becoming more of an understood real objective. But then spend eternity in hell? What is it? Like James asks, what is your life? It is a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. If you've ever watched smoke billow out of a fire, you see some wisps that are real small, you know, and they disappear quickly. Some that are long, you're like, wow, look at that. Still, within seconds, it's gone. We need to have the tenacity, we need to have the strength, we need to have the courage, we need to have the faith that by any means possible, just like Paul said in Philippians 3, by any means possible I may attain to the resurrection. That's what we want. And if this morning you've not been baptized, you haven't even started. You need to be baptized. Yes, the Bible teaches this. This is what Jesus taught. Jesus taught in John 3, unless a man be born again of water and spirit, he cannot Not, it's going to be harder. He says, you cannot. So you've got to be baptized. If you've not been, you can be. You can be born again of water and spirit, just like Jesus said. If you've done that, you're not hacking Agag to pieces. You're struggling with that. You've got sin you've embraced. You've built a little home for it in the back part of your house, you know, in your life. It may just be between you and God, but God knows everything. In either case, come forward right now as we stand and sing.